Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alazric Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Another busy day around baseball. That must mean Max Kepler homered and Hernan Perez had a good game. Welcome to the show. It's Fantasy Baseball Today. And it must mean that we have more developing closer news, and we're going to rank the new closers. Very exciting stuff. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. Hey, guys. What's up? Al, welcome to this week of baseball madness.
It is crazy. And I just said to Scott, you know, I figured with the trade deadline passed, we get a little lull in the action. But I think it got even crazier after the deadline.
Mm-hmm. Woo. Yeah, sure did.
It's a bad day for a trade deadline, quite honestly. Got swept under the rug.
It sure did. But you know, there was a lot that went down, I think, before Monday. We got to kind of talk about that on Monday's show. But yeah, stuff's been crazy. Edwin Diaz being picked up anywhere, everywhere. Ken Giles being picked up everywhere. And just a lot of storylines. I want to talk about Mike Zunino. I want to talk about Javier Baez getting more playing time. Are they more fantasy relevant? And yes, we will carve out some time for Jose Bautista. Your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Tuesday standouts. Why don't we start, guys? Enough dilly-dallying. Why don't we start with Dylan? Ooh, I didn't even dilly-dallying to Dylan.
Oh, I thought you did. I thought that was a good turn of phrase by you.
Ah, your subconscious is working overtime.
Yeah, man. Dylan Bundy, 7 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, 59% owned. Do you think we should switch the 5 and the 9 in the ownership on Dylan Bundy?
I'm closer to the 9-5 than the 5-9, to be sure. I'm still not, and it's hard to say this as good as Bundy has been, as much as he's improved with each start, but I'm still not quite there to must start status with him.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Now, in the first 3 starts, because this was start number 4, he gave up 5 combined home runs. And that's extreme, but it's not totally shocking given the park he pitches in, the division he's in, and the high fly ball rate that he typically has.
Oh, hi. Did somebody order a wet blanket?
Yes.
Party of one.
I mean, fortunately, since he's only 59% owned, I think we can take the exciting step of calling him must add at this point, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
I love this quote from Darren O'Day. It's a great quote. He was born with a gift to command a baseball. That's what he said about Dylan Bundy. And a guy with 96 mile per hour fastball, you command it. That's pretty good. No walks in this game. 88 pitches over 7 innings.
I'm going to be the wet blanket here. He did walk a batter.
Oh, it was one? Okay. Well, 88 pitches.
One walk, yeah. One hit.
Very efficient.
Yeah.
And that's 3 hits total in his last 2 starts combined.
Yep.
I am blown away because I saw his numbers as a reliever. Unimpressive. People kept telling me he's better than the numbers. Okay. But I mean, ultimately numbers are what matter in fantasy. So if he's going to be what he was in relief as a starter, it's not going to go well. Clearly been a lot better than that.
Whoa. What am I missing here? You thought that he was underwhelming as a reliever? Cause it seemed like he was putting together a few strings of, you know, like I'm just doing this off the top of my head. 2 1/3 innings. You know, 2 hits, no runs, 3 strikeouts, those kind of performances. It looked like he was doing pretty well before he entered the rotation, Dylan Bundy.
Right before he did, he started to pitch better. But the overall, like, it was a 150 whip or close to
okay.
it.
I mean,
it wasn't good.
Certainly around the time that he was starting to get stretched out, back like mid-late May, he wasn't looking that impressive. I had some doubts, certainly at that point, about whether or not he'd get in the rotation and if he'd be any good if he was in the rotation.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's really turned it on, you know, since the beginning of June, really. And we don't have to belabor it because there's a lot to talk about today. But Dylan Bundy is somebody that you definitely want to add. I guess I have to throw out the who would you drop scenarios. So guys like Gio Gonzalez, who's, you know, been pitching better lately. Maybe that's not that easy of a decision.
It is easy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. Yep. Easy for me. what's his name? Jaime Garcia. I always talk about those two guys together.
Oh, easy.
Yeah. Get rid of them.
Yeah.
What about Chris Tillman?
I would do that too. And I think I said probably about 2 weeks ago that I was ready to drop Chris Tillman. So that's, again, that's an easy one for me.
I don't see how anybody could, Chris Tillman could be the worst pitcher on anybody's fantasy team.
Okay. How about Tyler Skaggs? You just picked up Tyler Skaggs.
Who would you rather have? I wouldn't do that.
I still find it hard to believe he'd be the worst pitcher, or at least the worst player. I mean, probably some hitter you could drop, like Trevor Story.
How about Andrew Cashner?
Yes. Bundy over Cashner.
I think so. I'm stalling on that a little bit because I went and picked up Cashner in a few leagues a couple weeks back. And, you know, I kind of want to let that play out. And I'm not starting him this week with the start of Colorado. Mm-hmm. But push came to shove. Yeah, I'd go Bundy over Cashner.
So last thing about Bundy is I still think he's only RP eligible and needs one more start before he's eligible as a starting pitcher. But that will happen by the end of the week. Scott mentioned Trevor Story. He is out for the season. We'll get to the big news on Danny Salazar, on Lance McCullers, and whether or not you should be picking up Joe Musgrove. I think there are some sneaky guys to be adding right now. But I have to ask you about Max Kepler. Did you see the article I sent you, courtesy of one of our listeners, Chris Bunn, who sent it to us on Twitter? Did you take a look at what was said about Max Kepler?
I didn't. I'm sorry. I saw that you sent it. Didn't have the time to look at this morning and wish I had. So,
Al, thanks for joining the show. Why don't you get the heck out of here? Scott and I will take care of the rest.
I'm looking at it now. You sent it at 7 this morning, to be fair. 7 in the morning is a busy time for us.
Yeah. So basically, it's kind of an interesting article. Before a series at Yankee Stadium, he was taking batting practice. He got some advice from Reggie Jackson, told Max Kepler that during batting practice, spread the ball, hit the ball to all fields. Don't just try to hit it as far as you can. And something seemed to click with basically his BP routine. Also in this article from TwinCities.com, talking about how Kepler is able to make adjustments on the fly. Just a very flattering article about Max Kepler, who's still only 66% owned, and he is a top 8 outfielder since being recalled on June 1st. I know we talked about him yesterday. We have to talk about him again. Go ahead on Max Kepler.
Yeah, I'm going to double down on this buying into Max Kepler as a power hitter, not to the degree that he's going to continue a 35 to 40 homer pace like he's been on now, but 25 to 30 homer guy with plate discipline. We saw that begin to manifest yesterday with 3 walks, I think it was, or 2 walks. And one thing I didn't mention about that 3 home run game was Paul Molitor and Kepler both talking about the kind of backspin he gets on the ball.
Oh yeah, that was in the article.
Yeah, yeah. And if you, I didn't see this home run yesterday, but each of the 3 home runs 2 days ago were just line drives, like rising almost to the point where they reached the outfield fence and then they started to fall a little. Like just really the kind of home runs that don't happen by accident, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he killed
I'm all about Max Kepler now.
Get him on your team. Okay.
Yeah, you know, the way I think of it is if I was giving Tyler Naquin the benefit of the doubt a few weeks back, Kepler gets that and then some.
Al, I don't know if I've heard you weigh in on Hernan Perez, who we've spoken about a lot lately. Another good game for him. 3 more hits. He's 50% owned. Is he more like Max Kepler and Tyler Naquin, or is Perez more like Danny Espinosa, who faded pretty quickly after a great month or so?
I think he's, in terms of lasting value, I think he's more like Naquin and Kepler.
Ooh.
But in a different way. And actually, the guy that I've been sort of comparing him to in my own mind is Leonis Martin, because that's somebody who, when he got hot early on in the season, I picked him up as a power speed source. And I trusted the speed more than the power with Martin, and it's kind of panned out that way. And I feel that way about Perez. Like, I think that and maybe Eduardo Nunez is also a good comparison here, that I don't know that I trust the power we're seeing from Perez lately, but I don't really care. He's still a ton of bases.
Right.
Craig Counsell doesn't seem to have any problem with the running game and getting that going. So that makes me very optimistic for Perez.
If you are a 10 on the addometer for Max Kepler, where are you guys on Aaron Altherr, who is 22% owned and he's played five games and he's had two really good ones and three hitless ones. But right now the overall numbers look pretty good after a home run and a steal last night. Aaron Altair is 22% owned. If Kepler's a 10 on the Atto meter, where's Altair?
I'll put him at a 7. Uh-huh. I don't know. I don't think Altair should be added in three outfielder leagues. I think he's kind of borderline in mixed five outfielder leagues, but he's definitely in that mix, needs to be considered. And certainly anything deeper than 12-team mixed, Altair is a must add. And given that he's at 22% right now, that's a lot of leagues that Altair could be added to.
Yeah, I think I agree with that assessment completely. And I liked Altair as a sleeper preseason before he hurt his wrist or whatever it was. But four games, I mean, it's hard to react across the board after only four games, except in five outfielder needs where the need at that position is so desperate.
Deep down in your gut, deep down in there, who do you think?
Deep down in there, reaching in.
Let's dig in. Close your eyes. Who do you think is going to be better rest of season, Aaron Altair or Jason Hayward?
Oh,
my gut says Altair. Like, I couldn't justify dropping Hayward for Altair, but just if I am dreaming up a scenario and it's only one way it could go, that would be the one way.
Well, I think Scott pretty much spoke my thoughts on this pretty well, but I think Scott said that you couldn't.
Drop
Hayward.
Yeah.
And I couldn't either. And I think that's got a basis in something. And I think, even deep down, I'm not completely doubting Hayward. I think that he's too good to stay this bad.
It's a basis in probability.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, Hayward is the higher probability pick, but I just feel like I don't trust the probability, I guess.
Yeah. I will go ahead and say deep down, it's really close, but I think Hayward will be a little bit better.
All righty. And the last guy I want to mention, I've been hogging the standouts here, is Anthony Rendon, who for the year is the number 11 second baseman in points and number 12 in Roto. And Rendon is the number 12 third baseman in points and number 11 in Roto. So he's right around 12th in points in Roto for both second base and third base. He's been fine. But since the All-Star break, he's been much better than that. Rendon's batting .328 with four home runs, 13 RBIs, nine runs, three steals in four attempts, and five doubles in 15 games. That's an OPS over 1,000 right now for Anthony Rendon since the All-Star break, one of the hottest hitters in baseball. Is this just a hot streak, or is this something more for Rendon?
I think it's something more because I think I was pretty much the low guy on Rendon coming into the season, but I certainly had greater expectations for him than what he had given us in the first half, so... I don't know that he's going to sustain this level, but this is more like it.
Okay. Guys, I was watching the Angels A's game last night, and Albert Pujols comes up to bat against Sean Manaea. And I only saw one inning of the game, and Manaea looked great. I was very surprised at how bad his final line was. But anyway, they talked about Albert Pujols and how he drove in 31 runs in July. 31 runs in July with an All-Star break in there. And the broadcaster said 31 RBI. And I, for like the last 5 years, have gone back and forth, RBIs, RBI. Where are you guys on that one?
RBI.
Scott?
CBS tells me to be RBI, so I'm RBI.
Okay.
If I ruled the world, I'd probably say RBIs, but I don't.
But I thought about it. I had this moment where I think I might have solved the problem. I think it has to be RBI singular because of, am I wrong on this? Because
that's given the Angels broadcasters a lot of power.
Yeah, I know.
Miles, I agree with you and I agree with them.
But miles per hour is what I kept coming back to, right? MPH. You would never say he's driving 35 miles per hour or MPH. I don't know. Does that make any sense? I compare
that
runs.
Totally makes sense to me. Yeah,
it does, right?
Miles per
you go.
Hour.
Well, runs batted in versus miles per hour, I feel like they're pretty similar.
I guess the only thing I could say is that it's very rare that you hear, other than on a car ad, that you hear somebody say MPH.
I know, but they would never say MPHs.
If we're going to apply logic to this, which is not really, I don't think the way we should approach it, because it's language and there's no logic to language. It's all about familiarity and how often things are used a certain way, but whatever. RBI is something you count, and miles per hour isn't. It's just a,
it's okay, a rate. Fine. How about miles per gallon? Would they say 32?
They do say MPGs on the ads, I think.
MPGs?
I think, yeah. Don't they?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Damn it.
They're wrong though.
We're right back where we started. Okay. Any major standouts? We're going to get to all the bullpen guys. Who is the one that you wanted to add the most between Giles, Diaz, Bedrosian? I hope I don't have to say his name too often. And
oh, you're going
to
say it a lot.
Thornburg. Who's the one that you wanted to add the most?
Well, first of all, and I haven't looked ahead in the notes, so I don't know if we're getting to this, but the guy I actually wanted to add the most, and I think did add the most overnight, was Moncada.
No, we're not getting that in the notes. Fill me in.
Yeah. So, the Red Sox are talking about, and Dave Dombrowski in particular, talking about him coming up sometime this season, and he's already getting work over at third base.
They're gonna
so that seems very significant.
They're going to win the World Series, aren't they?
So now is the time to pick up Moncada and stash him.
He's going to be their Miguel Cabrera like the 2003 Marlins had Miguel Cabrera. Moncada is going to be the 21 year old who's so much thinner than he's eventually going to be, just always on the base paths, running around, scoring runs. Yeah. That could be what happens.
Yeah. But I would say, in terms of the standouts, definitely Joe Musgrove, because that was an incredible performance. And now, if McCullers, if the injury is serious, then Musgrove has a spot in the rotation, and it certainly backs up what he did in the minors this year.
One hit in 4 1/3 innings with 8 strikeouts coming in to relieve McCullers, who it's a shame. What happened to his elbow? Because he was really starting to click, I feel like, coming off back-to-back 10 strikeout games. But were you just rattling off closers a second ago there, Adam?
Al took it in a completely different direction. Yeah.
Bring it back, Scott.
Well, I don't remember exactly which closers you mentioned, but pretty much everybody who's inherited the role here the last couple days is an upgrade from what was already there.
Yeah.
They're all very impressive in terms of strikeout rate. Cam Bedrosian, along with the rest of them, he has a 188 FIP on the year, which ranks right up there with Kenley Jansen, Aroldis Chapman, anyone else.
And he still hasn't given up a run since May 31st, right?
I'm not sure about that, okay. But it's a low ERA, so it wouldn't surprise
me. I will check
11.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. I don't know about, I feel like he's good enough to just take the job and run with it, but Houston Street's injury doesn't seem like a season ender or anything, so it may not play out that way. I feel more confident adding Ken Giles, Edwin Diaz, probably even Tyler Thornburg. It's not like the Angels are going to get more save opportunities than the Brewers do. So yeah, I'll take Thornburg over Bedrosian as well. But he's definitely an exciting pickup in his own right.
Yeah, so he has not given up. That's now 25 appearances in a row that Bedrosian is not allowed to run. And as you probably expect, the peripherals during that stretch are just pretty mind-blowing. 23 and 2/3 innings, 33 strikeouts, only 5 walks, 13% swings and misses. So a lot to like there.
Does it matter at all that Mike Socha said they're going closer by committee?
Yeah, he did say that. It's worth bringing up.
I just don't see who's going to challenge him.
Right. Joe Smith, because he's done it before, but I don't know. That would just be Socha being stubborn.
Now.
Oh, he got traded to the Cubs.
Yeah.
Okay. So not Joe Smith.
Joe Smith might be his biggest challenger, even though he's not even on the team anymore.
Okay. So yeah, there are a lot of really good options right now. I think everybody's pretty aware of it. Let's get to the rest of the big news. Trevor Story's out for the season with a torn UCL on his thumb. So does that mean Daniel Descalso is the starting shortstop most days?
Looks like it.
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay. Danny Salazar is going to miss 2 to 3 weeks with elbow tendinitis. Lance McCullers left with elbow soreness. We don't know the severity of it yet. And not only did Musgrove, have that great appearance, he actually tied a record for the most strikeouts by a reliever making his major league debut. So Joe Musgrove put him on your radar. Yasiel Puig was sent to AAA, not a surprise. Miguel Sano did start against a righty yesterday. I talked about how he was only starting against lefties recently. But his defense is awful. Trevor Plouffe is going to be back soon. So, you know, I don't think they're going to want to put him at third base. They'd probably have to DH Sano, right?
I think he's going to be in the lineup one way or another. Whether or not he DHs probably depends on how Kenny Vargas performs between now and then. But you got to think the Twins are all about developing their young bats at this point. Sano is going to play.
Okay.
Yeah, and Vargas hasn't been going that well lately, so I would think Sano will be the DH.
What development do they have to do at this point? They're knocking the crap out of the best Indians pitchers on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Jake Lamb homered, which was good to see, because in his previous 10 games, 3-for-36 with an extra base hit, 2 walks, and 14 strikeouts. And Lamb has been dealing with a hand injury. He had a sit during that stretch. So let's hope he's rebounding, getting healthier. Lamb was in a brutal slump. Brandon Moss, 41% owned, and Johnny Peralta, they both came off the DL. Moss started in right field. He homered and he doubled at Cincinnati. So he's 41% owned, was hitting pretty well before going on the DL. Is Brandon Moss under-owned, guys?
I would say so. I think he needs to be owned in any 5 outfielder leagues. You know he's going to help in home runs, even as a part-time player. And I think he's going to play closer to full-time than not. They sent Grichik back down. They've been okay with playing Stephen Piscotty in center. And even if they don't go that route on an everyday basis, Matt Adams isn't like some stalwart at first base. Moss can play that easily enough. So I do think he's under-owned.
So would you rather own Brandon Moss or the guy who's going to start tonight and make his major league debut for the Red Sox, Andrew Benintendi?
I would actually rather have Benintendi because I think he's going to get more playing time. And obviously, how well he does the major leagues is an unknown at this point. We know what Brandon Moss can do. But I'd take the flyer on Benintendi. I have a feeling that he's going to make a good, smooth transition.
Well, he's not going to start. I mean, because they said he's going to sit against lefties, right? I mean,
did they say that for sure? I thought it was speculated that he'd platoon with Bryce Brentz.
And if that is the case, then I'll go with Moss because we're kind of back to square one in terms of playing
right,
time.
That's what I was getting at.
But what do Alex Bregman's struggles say to you about Benintendi, Arcia? You know, I know Dahl's actually been good, though.
I'm not sure they say anything.
Yeah,
I think it's just
an unknown.
If anything, I feel like, I mean, between Francisco Lindor last year, Bregman this year, and probably several other examples on both sides of that, like, Max Kepler, shoot.
Yeah.
Minor league numbers are... I feel like they're only proving to tell us less about how a player's going to perform when he gets called up.
Oh, great.
We gotta let these things play out too. You know, with our Arcia, really the main thing that I look to him to contribute are steals. You know, and I made the comment earlier about Craig Counsell and, you know, giving VR and Hernan Perez free reign. But, think about Travis Jankowski, who was a little bit slow with providing the steals early on, and he's picked up the pace. So even if RC is a little, unproductive initially, I think as long as he's getting steady enough playing time, there's always that possibility that he clicks into gear at some point.
And that's worth mentioning, too, with Bregman.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's only 25 at-bats or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not like he's gone the way of Byron Buxton just yet, you know?
Well, Orlando Arcia batted 7th in his major league debut. He went 0-for-4 with a strikeout. Houston recalled A.J. Reed. He went 0-for-4 with a strikeout, which was not quite as bad as Alex Bregman, who went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. But R.A. Dickey really dominated the Astros last night. What's your level of interest in A.J. Reed, guys?
I think he's like my 39th first baseman, so pretty low. I'll take Moss over him.
What's your level of interest in Mike Minor, who had a good rehab start for Kansas City? And a couple months ago, we were... you know, fairly excited about Minor as a stash. What do you think now?
Well, I'm less excited now just because he's had some setbacks, and I realize he's, you know, come back from those. But I just don't necessarily trust the health.
Okay. Well, it's another guy, maybe in a really deep league or something like that.
Yeah, for sure there.
You can look at Mike Minor and Taijuan Walker likely to start this weekend. And we love to help you with your fantasy teams. We also love to help you save money and find tickets to concerts and sporting events, and you can do that, obviously, on SeatGeek, either SeatGeek.com or the SeatGeek app. Get a $20 rebate off your first purchase when you use the code FANTASY on SeatGeek. And now I am hooked on SeatGeek. It's the only place I go for tickets now. I tell everybody about it. It pools tickets from other websites into one convenient place so you don't miss any deals and you don't have to do all the work by yourself. Now, SeatGeek also ranks their tickets based on value. It's so convenient. It's easy to use. I just used SeatGeek yesterday, actually, looking for some Subway Series tickets. Kind of thinking about going to a Yankees-Mets game either today or tomorrow. Not sure if anything would probably be tonight. So let's see. But I'm going on SeatGeek. I'm looking at the prices. I'm looking at the values, seeing what makes sense. It's really a great website and app and much, much better than StubHub. I'm a convert. Take my word for it. Use SeatGeek to get your $20 rebate on your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab. Click add a promo code. The promo code is FANTASY, all caps, one word, FANTASY, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. And if you forget that code, you can always tweet me. I'm happy to help out. So to catch up on what's going on in the bullpen, Ken Giles is officially the Astros closer. Edwin Diaz got the save last night for Seattle. We talked about the Angels. They said committee, but Bedrosian got the save yesterday. Tower Thornburg got the save for Milwaukee. Kelvin Herrera got another save for Kansas City. Senwan Oh had a bad outing. They wanted him to get four outs. He gave up three runs and gave up a home run. At the red hot Cincinnati Reds, they're playing well right now, actually. Any concerns about Senwan Oh?
No, not at all. But so since Friday, how many closer spots have turned over? Eight or nine?
I plan to write about that today, actually. I feel like it's been about a third of the league.
Yeah.
After going most of the season with very little closer
turnover. Well, and the thing is, I just now counted up how many teams have the same closer that they had on opening day. Nine. So I think there's also kind of a higher level point to be made here about investing or rather not investing in closers too much on draft day, because here we are just over about two thirds into the season, and we've had more than two thirds turnover.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting, but if you're in a roto league, if you've gone through two thirds of the season with a bad closer situation, you might be doing pretty poorly in saves. You know what? Let's do an impromptu exercise. Because in our auction league, I bet the three of us took pretty different approaches to closer. And we're all doing pretty well. Scott's got 97.5 points. He's in first place. Al has 91.5 points. He's in second place. We got Jeff Bogus, who is in third place with 91 points, and I'm in fourth place. Big week for me! 88 points. I'm climbing up there. Thank you, Dylan Bundy. So I usually don't go for like the high-end closers, but I usually try to go for the, I don't know, in these leagues, like $8 closers that I feel have good job security. Santiago Casilla I have, but I also have Sam Dyson and Will Harris. And I think I picked up Ken Giles as well. So I probably made some bad investments on draft day. I don't even know. But yeah, I guess looking at my team, I've got Sam Dyson, Will Harris, Santiago Casilla, and Ken Giles. I have a feeling I'm first in saves, by the way.
You are second in saves.
Who's first?
Heath Cummings is first. And a lot of good it's doing him.
He's not having a good year.
No, he's like ninth overall.
So Scott and Al, you guys are like fifth and sixth with 62 and 61 saves. Ooh, close race there.
Yeah.
I've got, I just picked up Jake Barrett there because I'm assuming I lost Cody Allen. I've got Allen and Miller, and have been carrying them both all year. And then I've got, Zach Britton, who's one of the nine who's been there all season long. But yeah, it's fluid.
Yeah, I'm gonna make up some ground here because now I'm starting four closers. I just picked up Herrera, Kinsler, and Estevez were recent additions. But I lost Jeffers. Never mind. So I'm back to three closers.
That's
I see
the thing.
Jeffers in my starting lineup still. That's right. He got traded.
Well,
but
Scott,
he could be back. I don't know that that's going to last.
Scott, you drafted. You bid $5 on Sean Tolleson, and $2 on Jake McGee. And you drafted Jason Grilley. We basically do an auction for 23 spots and then a 7-round reserve draft. So all three of the guys that you got on draft day are no longer closing. You're middle of the pack in saves, and you're leading the league. I think that does tell you that you don't have to invest much in closers.
That's why I don't in auction leagues. I aim for my top closer to cost me $3 in a roto auction. Had to be $5 in this case, but I'm glad it wasn't any more than that because that was wasted money, it turns out.
Okay. So, let's look at some of the starting pitchers who struggled yesterday. Now, look, final line was a struggle, but a little deceiving for David Price. He threw 7 scoreless innings, came out in the 8th, gave up a home run, gave up 3 singles, was removed with the bases loaded, leading 4-1. Bullpen gives it all up. Final line is 7 innings, 7 hits, 4 runs, no walks, 5 strikeouts at Seattle. This is coming after 8 shutout innings at the Angels with 6 strikeouts. So are you guys totally cool with David Price?
Yep, totally cool.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Carrasco, Masahiro Tanaka, Madison Bumgarner, they had 3 bad starts, and you know, to varying degrees. Tanaka was 6 innings, 3 runs, and then he got knocked around with some inherited runners scoring off a reliever in the 7th and ended up being 7 runs and 6 and a third. But Carrasco, Tanaka, Bumgarner, anything to say about those guys?
Just that, actually, a couple things. Tanaka's the biggest. This was him starting on 4 days rest again, and it's amazing how can...
No, 5 days.
Oh, pretty sure. Maybe I counted the days wrong.
They're 31 in July, my friend. Maybe double check because that's very important. I think this might be his first bad start on 5 days rest, which shocked me against this crappy Mets team.
All right. I will open it up. Okay, so 27th was the last time he pitched. So 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st. First. Okay, you're right. Never mind. That's all out the window. Yeah. It's not consistent how much he struggles on 4 days rest versus anything longer because he struggled anything longer this time.
Well, yeah, but this is really the first time.
Let's talk about one time's enough to ruin consistency, right?
I guess so. Let's talk about Carrasco.
Let's talk about Carrasco because he's been pretty underwhelming. Even though his ERA was 2.45 going into this contest, his strikeout rate in his previous 5 starts was only
23 strikeouts and 28 and a third. I got your back.
That it. I want to know what the number is though, because I think it's more revealing.
Well, with 11 walks too. And while you figure that out,
the answer to that question is 7.3 per 9 innings in his previous 5 starts, which is not the Carrasco we know and love. He had also walked more batters than we're used to seeing from him.
That's the thing I find actually more concerning.
I don't know what it means necessarily, but it.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, maybe this should be our cue to stop thinking of him as an ace. Like,
well, look, hold on 1 second. Hold on. Before this 6 start stretch for Carrasco, that's been a little underwhelming. He had 2 games with 117 and 113 pitches. They were a complete game shutout at Detroit and then a 14 strikeout game at Toronto. I remember watching and saying, his changeup that day was one of the best pitches I had seen all season from any pitcher. So he threw a ton of pitches and had 2 great starts in a row, and he's been pretty underwhelming.
It's still plagging him 6 starts later?
I don't know. But I know he has a history of these like amazing starts and then kind of struggling after that. So I was looking into that now, but I don't know that I see much evidence.
Yeah, I feel like that's something I've noticed with him in the past too. Like his strikeout rate is very impressive overall, but it's elevated by these random 12 to 15 strikeout games. It's not like he's consistently 9 strikeouts, you know? So maybe I'm reading too much into this 6 start stretch. I would guess that's the most likely scenario, but it is worth bringing up.
Yeah,
that he was underwhelming prior to this awful start.
Well, see, and I'm breaking this down a little bit differently because to me, it's really the last 4 starts that have me a little bit worried. He had the bad start against the Yankees. That was a short start. but 4 Ks in 3 2/3. Before that, 5 Ks in 6 innings. No real issues with that. And I don't know, the strikeouts have been light in the last 4 starts, but the issue is he stopped getting ground balls. To me, that's the more concerning thing. And over those 4 starts, a 4.51 slugging, which compared against a 2.07 batting average is, again, nothing wrong with that batting average at all, but that's too many extra base hits. But the velocity's fine. The whiff rate over those 4 starts is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the strikeouts are going to be there. I just worry about the extra base hits with Carrasco.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the ground ball rate. That was actually something I saw with Tanaka. In his first 14 starts, he had a 1.15 ground ball to fly ball ratio. A lot of ground balls. I don't know what it was yesterday, but in the 7 starts before yesterday, at a 0.63 ground ball to fly ball ratio. It's almost half. He makes me nervous, Tanaka. But yeah, I'm still going to operate on the long rest, short rest theory.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, even if it's just that, that's too many starts that you can't trust Tanaka in.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. All right.
I don't know what was up with that mad bum start, but I'm not worried.
Still going to win an AL Cy Young. By the way, who would you say is going to win AL Cy Young? Because it's kind of yucky to think about. Aaron Sanchez looked like the clear favorite, but he has 1 start left.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think your preseason prediction, Scott, might be true. It might come true.
It wasn't just mine. I think Al Heath and I all predicted Corey Kluber.
Oh.
And as of today, he would be my prediction still because he has the momentum and it's probably going to be between him and Chris Sale, but Kluber is certainly trending better right now. I guess it's possible Verlander could continue to dominate and enter the discussion. But if you didn't think about who was in the NL and who was in the AL, none of those guys would come top of mind as Cy Young contenders, you know?
Who do you think the number one starting pitcher in points leagues is?
It's Scherzer, right?
No.
Is it still Kershaw?
No, he's number one in Roto. It's Strasburg.
Okay.
With that win-loss record.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a much tighter battle in the NL, much harder fought battle.
Yeah.
For that, because it could be Strasburg, could be Bumgarner. If Kershaw makes one single more start this year, it could still be him.
I want to look at two players who are, I don't know if I should say struggling, but overall, Jose Bautista, he homered yesterday, singleton homer. That was good to see. He's batting .221. Now, recently back from the DL, but before going on the DL in mid-June, Bautista was the number 14 outfielder in points leagues. And that's his better format. He walks a ton. But in a standard 5x5 non-OBP roto league, he was the number 36 outfielder. What do you think about Bautista?
You know what? I don't know. I think it's just because of the DL stint that it, you know, kind of went off the radar for me. But when I was setting lineups this week and, looking at Bautista, I did a double take. That's how many home runs he has.
Yeah.
The .220 batting average doesn't surprise me or even particularly concern me that much, but I did expect more power.
You think it'll come back? He's kind of old.
Yeah, I think I've kind of written him off. Not written, that's too strong, written him off, but I've kind of raised the red flag on Bautista before because of aging and what I thought was some apparent decline, and he came back. So I feel like it's premature to downgrade him. I was just surprised that he hasn't had more power up to this point.
And here's an under-the-radar one. DJ LeMahieu, still 93% owned and 80% started. And he's doing his DJ LeMahieu thing. He's not striking out much. He's hitting for a good batting average. But I only went back the last 28 days. I ran out of time to do a big, extensive, thorough thing. But I have noticed for a while that his power, the doubles, they're just gone. So last 28 days for LeMahieu, he's batting .293 with a .365 on base and a .359 slugging. Mm-hmm. Higher on base percentage than slugging. 1 home run, only 2 steals in those 28 days. 1 double, 1 triple, 11 walks, 19 strikeouts. That makes LeMahieu the number 16 second baseman in points, number 21 in roto in those 28 days.
Sinking like a rock.
Yeah.
Oh, just the last 28 days? Okay, I thought that was his overall ranking.
Oh, no, 28 days.
Okay.
Droppable?
Yeah. Well,
no. I don't think so.
In a non-middle infielder league. A league that doesn't require that third middle infielder.
Yeah. No. Probably benching him. But I like the skill set too much in the context of him, you know, batting in the Rockies lineup. And it's not even so much Coors effect for LeMahieu. I think it's just, you know, the run production that's around him, especially during homestands. But he's just a good hitter, not a great power hitter, but he's just a good hitter who sprays the ball and can hit for average and give you doubles.
But he needs to steal a little bit more.
That would be nice.
That was huge from last year. Like, would you even consider dropping DJ LeMahieu for Javier Baez?
I would not, no.
No, I wouldn't either. I'm thinking a little higher, and if, like, there's a scenario where I would drop him for Eduardo to hold on to Eduardo Nunez over him or hold on to D. Gordon over him. Mm-hmm. There's been some... I mean, for a while there, it looked like Nunez's value was done, but now that he's the everyday player again...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd rather have him than LeMahieu. So I think in those leagues where it's just one second baseman, one shortstop, it's kind of fringy. I could see him being dropped. I wouldn't be looking to do it, but I could see him just being excess.
Well, listen, people, I hope you didn't start Danny Salazar on Monday and Bumgarner on Tuesday in FanDuel, but these things happen. If you started, let's say, Zach Davies yesterday, maybe you looked brilliant. You saved some money, you got a good start, and you loaded up on your hitters. And that's what I love about FanDuel. There's just so many different ways to win money. So try it out as often as you'd like, as little as you'd like. No commitment. Contests start at just $1. FanDuel.com, the best place to play your daily fantasy baseball and pretty soon your daily fantasy football. Now enter your first league and either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel's automatically refunding your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. Go to FanDuel.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Sign up with our promo code. It's HOMERUN. That promo code is HOMERUN, no spaces, on FanDuel.com. Whew, man, so much to get through from yesterday. I'm just going to skip around here, throw out some names. Mike Zunino, 7% owned. He is, doing fine. He's got 719 slugging percentage, with 4 home runs and 32 at-bats and 3 doubles. And he's caught 8 of the last 11 games for Seattle. In that stretch... I was a little surprised he's not better than this. Number 14, catcher in points leagues. Number 20 in Roto. But Zunino's only 7% owned. Is he under-owned?
Yeah.
Oh, way under-owned. And I, too, am shocked that he's not higher than that in the rankings.
Yeah, most of the guys have more at-bats than him. But still, 8 of the last 11, that's a good thing. And only 9 strikeouts in 32 at-bats. Like, 5 walks and 9 strikeouts. That's pretty damn good for Mike Zunino, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is. Yeah.
Still too many strikeouts.
Is there a run production deficit or something? It doesn't really add up for me that he's not top 10 with those stats.
I don't know, but, especially in Roto.
But, yeah, I mean, he's an absolutely viable second catcher in mixed leagues. So he's way under-owned.
When you look at an 11-game stretch, it's so bunchy that he might be 2 hits away from being a top 10 catcher, you know? So,
yeah.
Does the 11-game stretch include his 2-homer game? Because I feel like that's half his production right there.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Okay.
I'm not positive, but I would...
I feel like that was a long time ago, but it's baseball season, so I lose track of time.
I think so. But Javier Baez, he has started 8 of the last 9 games for the Cubs with only 3 lefties. Now, Baez is hitless in his last 4 games, but... what do you think about him as 65% owned, Javier Baez?
I pretty much start him every week in Roto because he steals some bases, he hits some home runs. Not quite every day, but close enough that in a non-points situation, he's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works for me. My concern with Baez is even though he's playing a lot now, Madden seems to go in these... stretches where he tries out different things and different players wind up getting the short shrift. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen to Baez again.
Curtis Granderson sat yesterday with Jay Bruce in right, Deaza in center, Conforto in left. And that's without, and Michael Comforts, by the way, is what my phone called Conforto. And that's without Cespedes, who pinch hit yesterday, is going to DH today. I don't know. I think they might be prioritizing center field defensively over a hitter over their lineup, and it could hurt Granderson and Conforto.
Oh, it will. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I doubt it, they're going to do anything every day, but yeah. I think Granderson's done as mixed league.
I finally dropped him in a league.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a three outfielder league too. And you know, you mentioned your autocorrect there. I should have mentioned way back when I was talking about Joe Musgrove, that mm-hmm. autocorrect makes him Joe Mushrobe.
I like that. So Hector Santiago, Hector Santiago, I forgot about this trade when we were doing all the trade deadline stuff. We can knock this one out pretty quickly. Minnesota got Hector Santiago from the Angels. Do you care?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Three up. These three guys are showing a pulse. Victor Martinez, 10 for his last 19. Finally, with some power, both of his extra base hits in that 19 at bat stretch came yesterday, a home run and a double, but three walks, no strikeouts. He had been bothered by an injury. He had been really struggling, but Martinez, how much faith do you have in him? How much faith do you have in Michael Conforto, who I just mentioned, who's got three doubles in his last two games, and Yasmani Grandal, three home runs in his last six games, including one last night at Coors Field. V-Mart, Conforto, Grandal, how confident are you in those three guys?
Not at all in Conforto. He's not going to play. Grandal, by default, I'm confident in him. At least he has power for a catcher. Probably not a single catcher league guy because he sits so often, but whatever. He's mid-range.
Do you think it's realistic? Sorry, that the Mets just basically sit Granderson most days and use an outfield of... I don't know. No, because it's Cespedes.
I don't know about most days, but enough days that he's losing the little value that he's got in 12-team mixed leagues right now.
Uh-huh. I don't know how Cespedes is going to play. Like, they didn't put him on the DL this week because they have a bunch of AL games, but he said he can't push it with his quad. I still feel like there's a DL stint that could happen at some point.
Surprised it didn't happen already.
That's true. I guess I'm thinking more long term, and depending on your format, that may not be the way to approach it anymore because it's head to head situation. Playoffs are coming up. You got to think more short term if you're not already a lock to make it. But roto leagues, we still got a third of the season left, so
yeah,
that does require more of a long term approach. And in the long term, I don't think Conforto is going to get anything close to regular at bats.
Okay, I'm don't quite want to drop him yet in my roto league. I just want to see how it plays out after this week. Rotation, Adam Wainwright. Oh, great stat. Adam Wainwright's given up 10 home runs this year, all 10 on the road.
Wow.
And his last three road starts, none of them have been quality starts. How much do you trust Adam Wainwright on the road?
Well, until you mentioned that split, I was just considering him must start. So it's worth looking into, but I just think that he's just good enough overall that he gives you a chance to win regardless of the venue.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fluky. He's like flirting with good starts at on the road. It's not like he's been beaten up or anything. How much do you trust John Gray at home?
I hadn't.
Completely.
Scott does completely. Completely. I hadn't. That's why we have a huge disparity in our rankings. But somebody on Twitter asked me, I think it was yesterday, if he aces both of these starts this week, you know, do I trust him at home? And I would say I would. I'm looking for a reason to trust John Gray at home. And I'm particularly after the start, I'm pretty much there.
He hasn't given you a reason the last 3 months to trust him at home? Has he had a bad start at home in the last 3 months?
No, I'll tell you.
I thought he had.
One start at home in his last seven where a team has scored more than two earned runs. It was Toronto, seven innings, four runs.
It was only four in seven innings. I mean, that's not really a bad start.
I didn't say it was. No, he hasn't had one.
Okay.
That's the worst start he's had at home in his last seven home starts.
I will admit, I didn't think it was that many. Maybe there was something in the peripherals that was bugging me.
Well, if you look at the overall line, his first two starts of the season, he got throttled.
Yeah.
And they were both at home. Mm-hmm. So that skews it. I feel like that is less a home thing than a timing of the season when it happened thing.
Although this is interesting. This is, I think, what was bugging me too about. Now the Dodgers are not really a super tough matchup, but you know, he did well there. That, you know, I thought that impressed me. But home starts prior to this one, the Braves, the Phillies, okay, Toronto, which was his worst one, the Padres, the Reds,
and the Mets.
Yep.
So
okay. yeah. That's why I think I looked at the schedule and thought, okay, Gray still got something to prove, but I think I'm there now.
On the one hand, I understand that, but on the other hand, Coors Field is such a circus. Like, I feel like succeeding against any lineup is a major accomplishment.
Right. And he's not just having these decent starts, and they're pretty darn good. So that's John Gray. Last night was, I guess, kind of decent because he only pitched five innings. There was a rain delay. I don't know if that affected the outings, but he and McCarthy both didn't go very deep. So just tell me these fringy starting pitchers, who you want. We got James Shields. I know Dylan Bundy's going to be at the top of this list, so I'm going to cross him off here. James Shields, Brandon McCarthy, Zach Davies, Yordano Ventura, Sean Manaea, Dan Straley, R.A. Dickey, Fulton Evich, Matt Andrees, Anibal Sanchez.
Oh, it's a long list.
That is, but two stand out for me, and they're Manaea and Davies. I don't know what's happened to McCarthy the last couple starts. Okay, one is a course, so maybe I just need to write that off. But I'm just kind of in wait-and-see mode right now with Brandon McCarthy. James Shields, I have no interest in. This is the start. I think it was the beginning of the regression that I've been waiting for like a month and a half. Manaea has really rounded into form last few weeks. And Davey's just been a surprise, but he's been pretty consistently good. So yeah. I put those two, you know, above the rest of the field.
I will add one to their ranks. And I feel like it's a similar situation to Davies, actually. And that's Dan Straley.
Yes.
Been so reliable. And none of his rates are, like, bad. Like, there's not any obvious red flags. It's just overall kind of underwhelming rates. But the same goes for Davies. And I feel like we kind of have to change what our idea of average is with starting pitchers, because this year has been so offense driven in such a drastic turnaround from the last few years that it's kind of skewing our perception of everything. And I think among that is how valuable pitchers like Davies and Straley are.
So rank those three then: Straley, Davies, and Manaea.
Manaea for the upside, Davies, then Straley.
Same here.
Do you think Matt Andrees, back in the Rays rotation, he's 20% owned. Do you think he's going to be valuable for fantasy owners?
I do. Not all fantasy owners, but really good control pitcher. I think he's going to be somebody that you may want to start in a future two-start week, but mostly a deep leaguer who does need to be owned in more than 20% of leagues.
Do Avisaíl García and Jorge Polanco need to be owned in more than 9% and 3% of leagues?
Maybe a little more. Polanco's kind of interesting. Should get a lot of extra base hits like he already has. There's some power room to grow into more of a power hitter there. But it's too early at what has become deep positions, all the places he's eligible, for me to really buy into him in standard mix leagues. Yeah,
sure. And let's read some emails after I update everybody on some more news and notes. Zach Cozart did not start with a bruised finger. JD Martinez should be back before the end of the week. Hanley Ramirez hurt his wrist slipping down the steps yesterday, so he's getting a precautionary x-ray. D. Gordon sat yesterday. Derek Dietrich started. Gordon came in as a pinch runner and got picked off. Good job, D. Gordon. As Drubal Cabrera is on the DL, Matt Carpenter should be back later this week. Gerardo Parra could return from a knee injury soon. Bryce Harper sat with an illness. Jordan Zimmerman's going to start tomorrow. And David Phelps is going to join the Miami rotation. He will start Friday. That's at Colorado, so don't start him. But would you rather have Phelps or Andrees if you were looking for kind of a sneaky pickup?
I'll give a slight edge to Andrees. But, yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
Yeah, cool. Let's finish it off with some relevant emails. This is from Jeff. Would you trade Andrew McCutchen for Adam Eaton?
No.
Yeah, not a chance.
Okay. From Eric. Am I better off with Raul Mondesi or Scooter Gennett at second base?
Mondesi, but they're both not particularly exciting to me.
Yeah, if I got to pick one, it's Mondesi.
Jed Jerko's not available in that league. Wilmer Flores. I think I'd rather go with either of them.
This is from Mike. Rank the new closers: Senwan Oh, Sam Dyson, not that new, but
new closer.
Yeah. Kelvin Herrera. That's, you know what, it's helpful to rank him anyway. Dyson, Kelvin Herrera, Ken Giles, Edwin Diaz, Tony Watson, who got a save last night.
Giles, Diaz, Watson, Dyson, Herrera. I'm making Herrera last just because Davis could be back very soon.
I'm going to put Dyson last because I don't trust his job security. And, I mean, Herrera's so...
He's better. Yeah. He's better.
I think I put Watson second to O just because of job security. And the way the Pirates provide their closers with save opportunities is... It's been very high this year. I think Melanson was the seventh best reliever in points leagues before getting traded, and that includes all the Sparps.
Yeah, so interesting because I had Cishek and Watson going into this week in our points league, and I luckily was able to bench Cishek for Dylan Bundy. I think that's probably going to end up being a good decision. but I knew I was going to drop Cishek, and I put in claims for both Giles and Diaz. And I was going to drop Watson for Diaz, but I wasn't really sure why. Cause I wanted Giles. Giles was my number one, of all the availables. Senwano wasn't available. I think Giles would be my number one anyway. I think he might be the best. Like, he's now in that discussion with Andrew Miller, with Kelvin Herrera as the best reliever in baseball. He's in that discussion.
Yeah. You include Kelvin Herrera in there.
Yeah. I think the Astros are going to be better than the Royals, and they've just played a lot of close games, given their guys a lot of save chances. I think Giles is going to take advantage of that.
But what my point is, I don't disagree with you. Giles, his upside is that of an elite closer, but the same goes for Diaz, the same goes for Herrera, the same goes for Cam Bedrosian.
What about Watson? I was going to drop Watson for Diaz.
Not Watson. Watson, I don't think has the upside, because I don't think Melanson did either, and that doesn't mean Melanson wasn't a top reliever in fantasy.
What was he this year? Because the thing is, they're not as good this year as they were last year.
He was seventh in points leagues.
He was seventh
before getting traded. Yeah,
okay. I honestly think Giles could be number one here on out.
He could, but the other things you have to factor in are consistency of save opportunities, and even more so than that, job security. I mean, the Astros have changed closers twice all year, so I don't think Giles' first day on the job is just got it all sewn up, you know?
Sure. Now, in that league, we look at all the guys who were available. You know, it's a two-closer league with 12 teams with starting pitchers who are eligible as relief pitchers. So that might factor into your decision as well. If I picked up Giles and he struggled and he lost his job, I'm pretty confident. I think Santiago Casilla is on waivers in that league. I'm pretty confident I could get someone.
That makes perfect sense. Definitely sell out for the upside in that case. But if you just have a one shot,
yeah,
you can only get one of these guys and you're stuck with them the rest of the season. Watson's got to be high on the list.
By the way, we haven't mentioned Betances at all, right, in this group?
Oh my God, you know we haven't.
Yeah, and you made me think of him, Adam, because you a couple of times you threw in there about whether or not a team's gonna, you know, win games, and in researching Betances, in a piece I wrote at the deadline, four of the top closers, I don't remember if it was top eight or top nine, but they were, you know, very close to the top, all had at least 25 saves at the deadline. Genmar Gomez, Jeremy Jeffress, David Robertson, Alex Colome. Four bad teams that don't score runs.
Yeah, I see it. I see it. And I actually don't think the Yankees setup men are going to be bad at all, because Chad Green is starting tonight. So I guess that means Severino stays in the bullpen. And Adam Warren's not bad. He's going to be a lot better than he was with the Cubs. I think Tyler Clippard's going to be fine. So I think they're going to get the ball to Betances enough. So who would you guys rather have, Betances or Edwin Diaz?
Betances.
And Betances is the clear runaway. He's immediately a top five reliever for me, because I don't question the job security at all. And he is 3 years in a row, I mean, been arguably the best reliever in baseball. It's not like Giles, and, you know, for 3 months he couldn't even rely on him as a setup man, you know?
I feel like Betances is having his worst year, though. Oh, my God. He's got a sub-1 whip with He's only walking 2.6 per nine. Boy, that's surprising. He felt like he was doing worse this year.
Yeah, I think he may have had a high rate early, but he's definitely overcome that. And he is currently 82% owned. I think that has gone up a bit in the last few days, but he's still out there in some leagues.
Okay. All right, guys. Finish it off with a couple more from the Bunghole Surfers. This is to Hal, Reese, and Dewey.
Malcolm in the middle.
Mm-hmm. I understand that highly touted prospects don't always produce after being called up, but what do you think about Alex Bregman? It's been difficult to watch him. Do I gotta have faith in a George Michael voice? No, I'm not doing that, sorry. Or do I drop Bregman for Jerko, Addison Russell, or Marcus Semien?
I think it's even so, as bad as it's been, premature to wham Alex Bregman.
Nice.
I mean, not in the negative way, not in the you gotta have faith. And I know that's George Michael's solo material, by the way.
Yeah.
So, Heath and I talked about this before the podcast. I think the Astros should give him another week. And, you know, in fantasy, I mean, if you're in a daily league right now, I think you do, you know, sit him. But, I think, you know, if he picks it up before Monday, that you got to start him.
I did drop him behind Marcus Semien in my rankings yesterday, back behind him, and Simeon's on this list. But one key note in here that Adam didn't read is that Ian Desmond is this guy's starter at shortstop. So this is for a bench spot. I would hold on to Bregman's upside over Semien in that case.
And last one, with Trevor Story ending his season. I don't know who wrote this email. Who do you want to replace Story? Wilmer Flores, Eugenio Suarez, Jed Jerko, or Cesar Hernandez?
I'd say Flores. If you need steals, if it's Roto, I'd probably go with Hernandez, but otherwise Flores.
If Arcee is out there, I would take him over all of these guys.
Yeah, I would too.
All right, then. Thanks, dudes. Appreciate it. Good show. Busy show. Lots to catch up on. I think hopefully we did our job, and hope you all enjoyed it out there. Al and Scott, we'll talk to you guys on Friday. See you later.
See ya.
Bye. Machado or Bono or no.